State and federal disaster survey crews have departed western Alaska after visiting communities impacted by the fall storm. The team left Nome on Sunday after surveying Nome, Teller, Brevik Mission, and Unalakleet. A total of 16 communities were surveyed along the west coast of the state. John Madden is director of the State Department of Homeland Security and Emergency Management, and he says one challenge in understanding the scope of the damage is the enormous area ranging from Togiak in the south to Point Hope in the north.
This is the first disaster in some years in which it's been this widespread. Fortunately, most areas were not hit catastrophically, but there were damages across 1,000 miles of coastline in those 35 to 40 communities. So it's going to be a while before we can get a good, solid estimate of all the damage, and then that will be the basis for what options we have to address that.
The teams are now going through the numbers and compiling information to pass on to the governor and his disaster policy cabinet. The governor will make a decision on whether to declare a disaster and activate the state's disaster relief programs. Governor Parnell could request a federal declaration if the damage is beyond the capability of the state's disaster program. Madden intends to have the report to the governor sometime next week with a decision soon afterward. He says the time and labor-intensive portion of the process is happening right now.
It takes a lot of time on the ground. And after we get those individual interviews with owners and people who live there, then we put them all together into a larger statewide package. That's the time-consuming part. Once it gets in to the governor and his advisors, it doesn't take much at all after that.
The state has received local disaster declarations from Good News Bay, Kivalina, Nome, and the Northwest Arctic Borough. Madden says there are likely more communities that wish to issue declarations but do not have the staff resources to do so. Madden says the relatively small amount of damage is because of the early warning, good local preparations, and a little bit of luck.
As most of us in Alaska know, and people on the coast know it better than all, that it just takes a few points difference on the direction of the wind can make a big difference on how much water and where that water goes. You still need to be very mindful that the next storm is always just over the horizon.
The department's Jeremy Zidek says the team in Nome had hoped to get to Little Diomede, but Evergreen Helicopters was not flying. And an update on a story that you heard about yesterday. A federal court in Washington, D.C. has upheld the endangered species listing of the Cook Inlet beluga whales. The Parnell administration had sued to overturn the 2008 listing by the National Marine Fisheries Service, arguing the whales were recovering and did not need the extra protection. The state also claimed the endangered listing would be an economic blow to Alaska tourism, oil, and fishing industries. The Center for Biological Diversity was one of six groups that intervened in the case. Alaska Director Rebecca Noblin says the decision leaves in place all the protections that went along with the listing.
It still has its critical habitat in the Cook Inlet. There's a recovery team right now working on a plan to help recover belugas, and that work will go forward. And all of the prohibitions to protect the whale will stay in place. So the federal government can't allow any activities that would jeopardize the beluga or destroy its habitat in Cook Inlet.
The state has the option to appeal the decision, but Attorney General John Burns says the decision has not been made yet. A new effort was outlined at last week's Pacific Marine Expo trade show in Seattle to allow vessel owners and operators to determine the energy efficiency of their vessels. Mike Mason was there and has more on the story.
High fuel prices, especially the extremely high prices in rural Alaska, cut into the margins for commercial fishermen. Many people and entities are looking at how to make commercial fishing vessels more fuel efficient, including the Alaska Sea Grant Marine Advisory Program and the Elliott Bay Design Group. At the just-concluded Pacific Marine Expo, a presentation was given about how to use an energy audit for commercial fishing vessels. Reg Wren is the senior marine engineer for the Elliott Bay Design Group, which is one of the organizations working on greening commercial fishing vessels. He says the first step in making a vessel more energy efficient is to do an energy audit.
In an energy audit, we look for areas where your vessel operations or your equipment or your systems or the combination of all three may be wasting energy. The goal of it is to reduce your operating costs. And we do that through looking for ways to reduce your fuel oil consumption.
The effort to reduce fuel consumption on commercial fishing vessels has been underway for many years, but the effort went into high gear in Alaska back in 2008 when gasoline and diesel fuel prices hit record high levels. Wren says one of the biggest inefficiencies in fishing vessels is the energy that is lost up the stack.
For every gallon of diesel fuel that you put into the front end of the engine, about two-thirds of that goes right up the stack or into the cooling water. Only about one-third of that gallon of diesel fuel gets converted to useful power. That's kind of the bad news, isn't it?
Modern commercial fishing vessels include a number of mechanical components that can be modified to be more energy efficient, but Wren says one of the easiest things a captain can do is to simply slow down. Wren showed examples of the amount of energy that can be saved on specific purse seine and trolling vessels.
The reduction in fuel consumption, when you just reduce the speed 10% and then go to 20%, almost a 51% reduction in fuel consumption. Now, it's important to understand, obviously, that your engine, while you slow it down, it may actually be operating less efficiently than when it's operating at its highest efficient peak, its maximum continuous rating, its highest specific brake horsepower. But the net result, the overall result, is that you're using less fuel, and it's significant. It's very significant.
The Alaska Sea Grant Marine Advisory Program has put together a publication called Fuel Saving Measures for Fishing Industry Vessels. In the publication, it stressed that it's important to monitor the amount of fuel used by a vessel. The point was reiterated during last week's presentation by Reg Wren.
First thing is you've got to be measuring and monitoring your fuel. If you're not measuring and monitoring your fuel and your electrical energy that you're consuming and producing, then you don't really have a place to start. You need that information. You need to apply common sense. Most of this stuff is common sense. The savings can be very small. On system by system by system can be very small, and over time they can add up. Look for the low-hanging fruit. We discussed that. Simple things.
There are a number of simple things that a vessel owner or operator can do to make the vessel more energy efficient, including making sure the engine is properly tuned and that there's adequate engine room ventilation. As an example, the new Alaska Sea Grant publication notes that a 30-degree reduction in intake air results in a 2-3% decrease in fuel consumption with the same performance. There are a number of emerging technologies that are coming onto the market that can help make a vessel more energy efficient, including electric, solar electric, and diesel electric hybrid propulsion systems. Wren says the new technologies can work, but his advice is to be careful.
You just have to be careful. Improvements are being made every day, but again, use common sense. Injecting hydrogen into your cylinders can give you improved fuel efficiency. But it may also blow your engine up, so just you got to be careful about that.
Many of the ideas presented during last week's presentation and included in the new publication from the Alaska Sea Grant Program are pretty simple to understand and implement, including to keep the bottom of a vessel clean and smooth to reduce friction and drag. The other man who participated in last week's presentation was Marine Advisory Agent Terry Johnson, who authored the new publication. He says one of the goals is to increase the awareness of the issue among commercial fishermen, and he says monitoring fuel and energy usage can lead to more awareness.
You know, you're all familiar with safety consciousness or a culture of safety aboard the vessel. There's the equivalent of a culture of fuel efficiency aboard the vessel, and the monitor is certainly one way of enhancing that consciousness. And it's actually something the skipper can have a lot of influence on. With regard to the time that crew are at the helm, and with other, and, you know, the use of lighting, the use of heating, the use of refrigeration, and a whole lot of other things, there's quite a bit of human decision making involved. And if a culture of fuel efficiency is part of the vessel's operating procedures, then that monitor can help enforce or reinforce that concept.
You can find the new free publication from the Alaska Sea Grant Marine Advisory Program on the organization's website. In Dillingham, I'm Mike Mason.